Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, helping product managers become product masters. Listen and get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, and this is where you make your move from product manager to product master, gaining the influence, confidence, and answers you need to lead product. A new book by O'Reilly Press discusses product management for B2B software applications. It's titled Building Products for the Enterprise. Now, much has been written about product management and the development of software products, but little that specifically addresses the characteristics of the B2B environment and what's special about that. The authors join this episode to discuss how product management is different from enterprise software products, including differences in consumers from B2B and B2C, the impact a direct sales team has, how the scale of the enterprise customers impacts our product work, the need for effective collaboration, and using organizational knowledge. The authors are Blair Reeves and Ben Gaines. Blair is a principal product manager at SAS Software and has previously held senior roles at Demandware, now a Salesforce company, and IBM. Ben is a group product manager for Adobe Analytics and previously managed digital analytics at ESPN. You'll find a summary of our engaging discussion at theeverydayinnovator.com/175. Hope you enjoy it. So Blair and Ben, thank you for joining the Everyday Innovator podcast.
Thanks for having us, Chad.
And listeners, Everyday Innovators, we've just had some nice banter, and I'm looking forward to a fun discussion about building products for the enterprise, which is the title of your guys' book. Why don't we dive into that? Why did you write this book?
Why did we write this book, Ben?
I can tell you exactly why we wrote this book and the origin. Blair and I met up in New York City. We had dinner. We were really just shooting the breeze. And I don't know if this was something you had been thinking about doing or if it was kind of a spur of the moment thing, but Blair pointed out that there's all of this writing that's taking place on product management, and very little of it is focused on, or none of it really is focused on, building products for businesses. You hear a lot about consumer product management. There have been a lot of great books that have come out recently, even just in the last couple of years, on the topic. But we hadn't seen anyone really focused on the challenges that are unique to the enterprise software space. And so as soon as Blair said it, as soon as he proposed it, you know, it was something that I always kind of wanted to write a book, but had never had someone to push me to do it. And Blair was that person.
So there's an interesting story there. So you guys, how did you meet then?
So it's funny. So at the time, I worked for a number of years at IBM with a product called Core Metrics, which was acquired by IBM, and I joined IBM right after the acquisition. I'm not sure if you've ever had any exposure to the web analytics wars, but Core Metrics and Omniture, which later became Adobe Analytics, were like two of the big competitors in that space. And I mean to cast them as equals, though really Omniture was the much larger, more sophisticated one probably. And so we were kind of competitors for a long time. But you know, everyone in the web analytics world all knows each other.
It's a total frenemy thing.
Yeah, totally. So Ben and I actually got to know each other that way, and you know, it was fun. And we did start to share, like, you know, articles we found on product management and stuff like that. Mostly in the sense of, like, you know, this sounds silly. Yeah. Or like, this is, you know, does this have any connection with your job, Ben? And he said, no. Does this sound at all familiar to you?
No.
And exactly how he says, you know, we talked about this for a while. And then, you know, he happened to be in New York one night when I was there. And so we hung out, got some dinner. I think Ben was sick or something like that. And so that's why he agreed to write it.
I probably had my annual sinus infection at that. It was February of last year.
Yeah.
And the
pitch was basically, look, I mean, there's just like Ben said, I mean, all the product management literature out there is very much geared towards consumer technology. And a lot of it to startups, you know, like what to do with your 10-person, you know, team, and you're the product manager. What do you do? And that just wasn't very applicable to anything we were doing. And so we decided, you know, there aren't a whole lot of resources out there for enterprise software product managers, and maybe we could do something about this. So we decided to, we'd write something. And we figured the plan was to self-publish it on Amazon, like, you know, just see where it went and, you know, put it out there. And one thing led to another, and O'Reilly got a hold of it, and they asked us if we'd be interested in publishing with O'Reilly, and we were like, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, and Blair, you said something really interesting to me in there, that as you guys were sharing, you know, work on, previous work on product management, what others have written, that some of this just sounds silly. And I think that's an important point to realize, that you have a contribution to make. My own progress, it was always like, wow, there's a lot of people that are really smart on innovation and product management and writing really good things. Then at some point that evolves and I go, huh, I don't think that's quite right. I think they kind of missed the point a little bit. And when you start realizing that, I think that's a good time to jump in and say, yeah, I think I probably could make a contribution here that's needed, because others have a different perspective on it, right? So something new that has been learned.
Yeah, exactly.
So good information to share there. A little bit more about the enterprise. So I've been involved in building products for B2B software customers, and then information system products that are used inside a company. When you talk about the enterprise, what are you talking about?
I mean, primarily it's enterprise software, you know, software that businesses are buying to perform some sort of need that they have internally. So, you know, mostly as opposed to like a consumer, you know, use case that we're kind of more familiar with, right? Yeah, okay. There might be probably a more sophisticated definition, but that would be mine.
I feel like the angle we took was really B2B software, not so much internal. I know, you know, I'm sure we've all worked with internal product teams that are where the customer really is an internal, where the use case is an internal one. They're building a product for internal consumption. I think one of the fundamental tenets that we deal with throughout the book is the concept of a direct sales force, and that fact that is very different than 99.9% of consumer software. And that's something that you probably don't get if you're a product manager inside of an enterprise who's building for the enterprise that you're inside of, because there isn't that concept of revenue and booking things. But that's interesting. Maybe our next book should be about the IT use case, IT product management.
I think there is definitely something there, because as we're building information systems for our internal users, there still are customers. And I think approaching it as a product for them is very smart. And we do a lot of the same things that we do in product management for external customers. Okay, so enterprise software, this is all the software that companies use, like ERPs, enterprise relationship planning systems, the CRMs, the retail systems, inventory, HR, finance, all that. Great. So that's the kind of systems that you guys are dealing with. Let's talk about how you view developing those enterprise software different than what you kind of alluded to just a moment ago about different kinds of product management, right? That you saw a need for this book to fill a gap here. What are the big differences that stand out?
So I think that some of the big differences we zeroed in on in the book are thus. The first that Ben just alluded to is that, you know, in consumer software, you have lots of different kinds of business models, right? You can have, you know, famously there's the advertising model, which everyone's getting in trouble for right now, and, you know, Google or Facebook or Twitter or whatever. There are affiliate models. There are two-sided marketplaces. There are and there are direct sale models, but there are self-service and fairly low deal size models, right? Mm-hmm. So you think of like Spotify or Netflix or even Uber or something of this sort, where you pay, you know, a pretty small dollar amount in some sort of subscription business. And all those businesses have user bases in the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, et cetera. And that really makes that business work. In the enterprise, of course, we have a much, much, much smaller customer base. You know, there are lots of very successful enterprise software products that have a couple of dozen customers, you know, or if you have a couple hundred customers, or, you know, thousands, and in the case of, you know, some really big players, you're a really big enterprise software vendor. And those customers are paying you, you know, five-figure checks, six-figure, even seven-figure checks, and so forth. And those are sales cycles in the six to 12 months plus, you know, give or take. They are relationships that go years and years long. And so the business model that we work with enterprise is almost exclusively direct sale. And that is a really big difference that we have to deal with, because as product managers, that means that we have to, you know, work with sales and marketing, but also that changes how we have to design and plan and build and service and maintain all that software and those products for customers, and how we interact with those customers and see what and ask and you know, discover what they really need. So that's one of the big ones. And Ben, I think that the other one that we talked about was, well, I guess I think there were three big differences, but one of the other big ones was customer problems and user problems, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's this added sort of, I think it grows out of this idea that you're talking about with direct sales, that there's this concept of course, you know, you want to solve user problems in the product. You want the product to be easy to use, easy for, you know, whatever role you're serving in the enterprise to get value out of your product. But there's also this buyer persona that's kind of looming out there that may not actually ever log into the product. Right, they may literally never log in, but they're tasked with buying. These concepts of procurement teams in the enterprise who are charged with going and working with vendors and creating the best value for their business, and finding, you know, and making sure that their vendors are you know, meeting all of the criteria that are set forth by that brand, by that enterprise. Mm-hmm. Which just adds a bunch of additional sort of, I think it adds richness and also complexity into the product management process, because you have to think about things that the end user doesn't really care about, but that the business absolutely does. Security is a great example in many cases, I think. Like, you know, people, there are people, of course, who care quite a bit about security, but there are plenty of people in business who don't, but procurement and IT absolutely do. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to consider those things as an enterprise software product manager. There can't be shortcuts around things like security if you want to succeed. So that is definitely another big one that we touch on in the book.
The difference between those roles, you talk about the user, and by that we mean the end user, the person actually using the system,
yes.
Right? And in the B2B context, it is very different. If I'm buying an app for my phone, spending my 99 cents or $4.99, whatever it is, and that embarrasses me, right? It's like, oh man, this was a stupid decision. This is such a dumb app. Why did I buy this? I'm the only one impacted. No one actually really knows. And so I'm not actually really embarrassed by this decision. In the business context, you have the problem you're trying to solve, so the end users need some solution. Mm-hmm. You have the sponsor, maybe, who's responsible for trying to get the budget, the funding for that. And you have these influencers along the way, and as you mentioned, procurement involved too. And all these people then become opportunities to be embarrassed if they make the wrong decision.
Exactly.
And the stakes are so much higher.
That's a good way of putting it.
The other... go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that one of the classic scenario we always run into is we have like an analyst or a business user who uses one of our products, and he or she, you know, is you know, maybe a junior member of that company, maybe even a mid-level member of the company, but they are not the ones who are signing a six-figure check for the company, right, on behalf of the company for this product. That's going to be a C-level, a vice president, SVP, C-level person, or whatever. Just like Ben said, and so some companies have a whole procurement, you know, division for this sort of thing. Other ones just have, you know, people with the juice, right?
Right.
And the people with the juice are never, well, I don't want to say never, right? But it, you know, classically, they're not going to be the ones living in this product or using it on a day-to-day basis. But like Ben said, we have to address, they have a very different set of buying criteria than does a user. And so understanding, you know, in the consumer software industry, you have the user is king, right? I mean, you know, understanding what he or she needs and wants out of a product, you know, is all that determines whether your product is successful or not. But there are lots of enterprise products where the user and their feelings just don't matter. You know,
well, and that's, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I was a user of Lotus Notes for years. And let me tell you, no one ever, you know, selected Lotus Notes out of a bake-off.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, IBM makes $1 billion a year on Lotus Notes.
Still, it's amazing.
Yeah.
They make so much money because, like, look, Lotus Notes is a workhorse. It is secure. Mm-hmm. It is stable, and it, like, it just runs, right? And everyone hates it, but, you know, it is what it is.
And I think that speaks to the other aspect of, like, this idea of customer problems versus user problems. It's actually it's a fascinating topic that has multiple facets that are worth going into with a business. You talk about consumer apps and it being all about the user, and with enterprise software, it's all about ROI. It's all about helping the customer grow their business, either by cutting costs or by generating incremental revenue. And that really changes the way that you think about things like customer satisfaction or customer value. When we go and talk to a customer to try to understand the challenges they're facing, they're these multinational, global, you know, almost like macroeconomic problems in many cases that we're trying to solve. In both of our cases, through analytics, through data, and by helping businesses be more informed. That's a very different conversation than, like, the app on my phone that plays an air horn sound, which is, like, a very sort of, you know, it's a quirky, fun little app that, you know, I enjoy sometimes when I'm on podcasts, just, and things like podcasts making a little air horn sound. But, like, that's there's no ROI there. The ROI is, like, I enjoy it. Or same with, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all these consumer apps that bring us some degree of joy or happiness or enrich our lives in some way is very different than a business trying to, you know, go from a $10 million business to a $50 million business by using data or, mm-hmm. You know, having a competitive advantage in how they implement a CRM system or ERP or whatever it is.
Right. Or responding to compliance. They have a compliance need that the regulatory they must address, and they need a system that does that for them. All kinds of needs there. Okay, so definitely a difference in the how we think about the customer, and then that B2B enterprise sell, many more buying roles that are involved, and that our product, as product managers, we need to think about meeting their needs along the way.
We'll get back to the discussion in just a minute. This episode of The Everyday Innovator is brought to you by Product Innovation Educators, your one place for online training to make the move from product manager to product master. When you enroll in one of our online courses, it's like having Chad McAllister as your personal coach. In each course, you get video lessons, added resources, and a private community for collaboration with other product managers and innovators. And, of course, you get direct access to Chad, who will answer your questions and get you heading in the right direction. Past students tell us the concepts, practices, and tools are valuable, but the real benefits they gain are being more confident, increasing their influence in their organization, and generating greater success for themselves and their company. There are 4 levels of training to become a product master. Find your level now. Get started by going to theeverydayinnovator.com/master. Your one place to become a product master. TheEverydayInnovator.com/master. Don't wait. Get started now.
Another topic that you brought up in the book, too, is effective collaboration as being kind of a difference that you saw. What does that even mean? Tell us about effective collaboration.
My take on that would be that in any product manager, whether you're in consumer or enterprise, has to collaborate with lots of different stakeholders throughout the company, right? In my experience, though, I mean, in enterprise, we just have more. And what I mean by that is we have, obviously, there's engineering and there's design and there is, maybe finance or marketing or something like that. We deal a lot more, I think, with marketing and sales. In a lot of consumer businesses, and I don't want to paint too broad a brush because you can find exceptions to this, right? But in a lot of consumer software businesses, product management doesn't really deal with sales until you're at a very senior level, especially like if you're like an advertising business, right? Because mm-hmm. that's just a very different kind of situation. So we have a lot of people a lot of different stakeholders to work with. If you're at a large company with many different product portfolios, you know, the level of complexity just increases exponentially in a lot of ways. And so learning how to collaborate differently with different stakeholders in the organization, especially if you're at a large company, is one of the really big challenges for any enterprise PM. And we have a whole section in the book around organizational knowledge, which is one of the 3 big buckets that we kind of set up as our must haves for product manager savoir faire, and learning how your company really works, understanding how sales really works at your company, because we are not a sales organization, and understanding how we create business value that way.
So I should ask, how then do we actually learn about how your company works? And I want to hold that just on a moment. On the effect of collaboration, when you're talking earlier about the market size in the enterprise space, the number of customers is fewer and they're much larger dollar values typically. And I think that itself changes this atmosphere of collaboration. Every deal seems to matter more, right?
Well, Ben has a lot to say about total addressable market.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I somehow became the total addressable market guy among the two of us, but I don't even know if it's a total addressable market thing as much as it is just the fact that you do have these. I mean, look, let's say, your hypothetical app that you mentioned, Chad, $5 that you download. Mm-hmm. That's something that scales, infinitely, potentially, right? You can, as many people as want that app can just go get it whenever they want. In enterprise software, you have sales reps and you have customer success managers and you have sales engineers or solution consultants or whatever your company calls them that help businesses implement the solution or see the value during the pre-sales process. And you have POC teams and all these stakeholders who are trying to make this thing go from a sales and go-to-market perspective. And you have, various teams in product marketing and marketing that all have kind of a say. Like they bring some clout to the table when it comes to figuring out what you're going to go do in a way that I think is very different than when you're, if you're in product management for a consumer application, a consumer software, the way that you go and figure out what to build and figure out what that thing needs to do and what problem it's solving and how you're going to go to market with it is just different. I mean, it's a lot more on you to kind of, to derive from very different kinds of data sets from larger quantitative data sets, rather than, we have the benefit in, I think it's a benefit. I mean, I enjoy it. I don't know whether it, I don't know if there's anyone who's studied whether it actually produces better software than the consumer model, but I enjoy the fact that with a smaller number of customers, with a set of brands that you can go work with, I can go to New York City and spend a week just sitting with people who are using our product at some of the largest brands in the world and learn from them. Mm-hmm. And you can do that, of course, with consumer software, but I feel like it's easier in some ways with enterprise software to figure out the personas, to figure out what they're trying to do, to see the patterns maybe in the problems that you're trying to solve. Whereas mm-hmm. with consumer, it can be a little bit more, what's the word? I mean, it depends on the software that we're talking about. But it can be harder, I think, to settle on what you're trying to do
right.
when you've got 100,000 users, 100,000 customers, effectively, who are users of your application and who all might want something.
I feel like in enterprise, like we have a much less diversity of customer, right? I mean, in the sense that our customers are business users of this persona or that persona or this persona, with use cases that are defined and constrained a lot by the industry that they're in, right? So people in media.
But Blair, the funny thing about that, and I know you've seen this too, is all those big customers, they all think they're unique and their problems are different.
Oh yeah,
is that amazing?
Yeah, for sure. If I had a dollar for everyone who said, "Well, we're really, we're really unique. We actually don't see any competition. We're the only company doing what we're doing."
Yep.
Yeah, and in consumer, there's almost more of a psychographic or anthropological element to your user personas that I think is a little bit less prevalent on the enterprise side because as Ben said on the enterprise side, we have a job to do. So Ben, you mentioned something that Christensen once said which is that the company hires your product to solve a problem, right?
He's the whole premise of his latest book, actually, I think, Competing Against Luck, I believe it's called. I hope I got that right.
And I like that idea because you know that really constrains the problem space that our products and enterprise are hired to do, as opposed to, gosh, in consumer, I mean, you have obviously you have a use case you're trying to fill, but the range, the variability of those use cases are probably a lot greater than they are for us.
Really good insights. And Ben, as you were talking through all those roles, you know, like the sales engineer and the customer service follow-up person and the account manager and everyone else that's involved, that also has to do with before the point you guys were making about effective collaboration, that we need to understand those perspectives because those are all perspectives on the customer. They have their own customer insights, and it's more of this voice of the customer research for us.
Yeah, that is such an important point, actually. If you think about the customer journey, think about the customer journey for enterprise software and how many people are involved in making a sale. Mm-hmm. You know, I can just, you know, speaking for what I've seen, you know, where I've worked and from talking to friends like Blair and others at other enterprise software firms, you've got the sales rep, you've got, I mentioned the sales engineer, they're involved up front. You've got demand gen creating the leads, you've got, you know, they're qualifying leads. In some cases, you've got, you know, what we call account development managers up front who are kind of, you know, reaching out to those leads or even cold calling in some cases. You've got, you know, from there, you bring in maybe consultants, you've got account managers, you've got all of these people. And that's just really up front in many cases. You know, and there are certainly models where, you know, where some of those roles don't exist for whatever reason. But it's just, it can be a massive undertaking, especially, you know, I think probably the bigger the deal, you know, Blair mentioned, you know, successful enterprise software firms that have a few dozen customers, you know, and who, you know, probably do eight-figure deals with those customers. The sheer number of people involved, you've got teams of 50 probably that are involved in helping get that customer up and running and making sure they're successful and getting value and recognizing that value, which is very different than, you know, going and signing up for a consumer software application.
Yep. And they're long-term relationships.
Yes, right.
You sure hope so.
Yeah, that's right. Or you don't stay in business very long. I want to go back to this topic of organizational knowledge that you brought up. What's your advice for helping product managers figure out how their company really works? Who is it they should be collaborating with?
Well, I think the first step is you have to read our book. But the second
that's dirty. Don't do us like that, Blair.
There are obviously a lot of this is contextual, right? I mean, you know, different companies work in different ways, and you have to do that. One thing that I think is useful is obviously, you know, after meeting, you know, who these people are, you know, I think you have to understand as a product manager, what does this function need from product, right? What is the marketing team or engineering or, you know, this sales team or that sales team or another product portfolio team, mm-hmm. what do they need from product management? What do they know they need, what do they not know yet that they need? Because you know one of the things that constrains product managers almost everywhere is that we're not actually in charge of anybody. You know, like we have to lead through influence, and we have to lead through providing value to other teams. And the only way to do that is to do something that, you know, is to deliver that value in a way that is recognizable by another team that does a completely different function. Mm-hmm. So understanding what, you know, those different stakeholders need from product in the first place, within the context of your market and your company and the other teams in your function, I think that's a good place to start.
And to Blair's point, I think those roles, those internal stakeholders that you need to understand, are going to find you as the product manager in the enterprise. Sales is going to reach out. Marketing is going to ask you how to talk about a feature that you're working on. So it's not so much that you need to seek them out. If I were, on the other hand, if I were starting fresh, you know, at a new company in product management and wanted to understand how that company worked, the first thing I would do, and I would recommend this because it's something you can do practically from day one, is go interview a longtime customer, or even actually a recent customer. Go interview a customer and talk about that customer journey, how they became aware of the product that they bought, how they engaged with the sales team, who was involved from your company's side, what roles people play today now that they're implemented and up and running, who they engage with when they have questions or concerns. All of that will, I think, paint a picture of how your company is set up to make customers successful. And those are the roles that I think you want to be most dialed into. Those are the stakeholders internally that you're going to want to stay closest to, both so they can teach you what's going on with your customer base and with your industry from their perspective, but also so that you can communicate out to them things that you're doing, things that, you know, as you are developing the product, as you're helping to solve customer problems, making sure that they're keyed in to the things that are going to be coming out and into their customers' hands. So that's where I would start.
That's good advice. It's also good advice for anyone that's wanting to interview for a product management job with a company, is to take the initiative to do some customer interviews beforehand and walk in having some information about what that experience is like.
So yeah, if you have that
set you apart.
If you're in a role where you can do that, I don't know if I've ever talked to anyone who's done that, I haven't interviewed that many product management candidates in my day. Who haven't been product managers before, but that is tremendous advice, Chad. That's like, if you're in a role where you can do that and you want to be a product manager, do it. And then interview for product.
Yep. So you heard it here, guys. If any of the everyday innovators want to try that out and put it in practice, please send me an email. Let me know how that worked. I think that would set you apart. It's similar advice I gave someone else recently, and she did a very good job of researching the organization, and in the process was about able to double her salary with the new organization. So
I need to spend more time with Chad.
Note to self.
This is excellent. Really good information from both of you. Appreciate you writing the book. It's a great contribution, building products for the enterprise. As listeners know, I love a good quote. What do you have for us?
I'll go first. This may be a cliche in product management, so hopefully your listeners don't roll their eyes when they hear this, but it's Winston Churchill. And he said, "You will never reach your destination if you stop and throw stones at every dog that barks." And to give a little bit of commentary on this as it relates to product management, I think it's easy as product managers to get distracted. In consumer, you know, I think about every time, and Twitter and Facebook are maybe bad examples because they're so big, but, they'll make a change. Twitter will make a minor change, like the time they switched from, from favorites to likes or likes to favorites. I can't remember what the change was. And like people went ballistic. And you can't back down on things. You can't get distracted by the users of the app were the dogs that were barking, and whatever Twitter is trying to do. And don't ask me, Blair is actually the expert among us on kind of theories around Twitter's product strategy. But
no one on God's green earth knows Twitter's strategy.
I'm not going to touch that, but you know, it would have been easy probably to get distracted, or it's easy to get distracted by people demanding features. And this is true as much in the enterprise. You know, it's easy to you've got a $10 million deal and they're demanding feature X. And, I think I also don't want to be so prescriptive and say that it never makes sense to do those things. Every business has its own challenges and its needs for cash flow and whatever. I mean, that's something you're going to figure out, but be deliberate about it. Don't let your product strategy be determined by who is barking the loudest, right? All the time. You will end up with a Franken product and your users will end up hating it.
And that's an excellent one. And don't get distracted, right? There's always those distractors telling you why something isn't going to work, why your brilliant idea is terrible. Sometimes we just have to move on. So
yep, you got to do you.
Very, very good quote. Blair, did you have one that you were going to share too?
I do. And mine is actually in a similar vein. And it's my personal philosophy as well as applied to innovation. And that is ask forgiveness, not permission. Because I'm sure you've had that before. But I take that to heart in a big way, because as applied to product management and applied to innovation, I mean, mm-hmm. no one is ever going to give you permission to blow up a business model or to, you know, disrupt a product or a way of doing things or anything like that. You know, people thought this, that cloud software was never going to go anywhere, you know, and that it was never going to work for enterprises, and it's a pipe dream and you're wasting your time on it and all this other stuff. People never thought that digital analytics would ever be applied to marketing in a really rigorous way, or that it would never, you know, this whole digital marketing thing is, you know, is a sideshow. It doesn't really work. You know, the ROI isn't there, blah, blah, blah. And then Amazon came along, ate their lunch, and you know, there, you can name any number of examples, but whenever I'm thinking about, you know, a hard problem that, you know, I catch myself thinking about getting permission to do something like that, or you know, thinking about how a product or a system could work. That's kind of what I fall back on. I think about, you know, who's going to give you permission to do that, and whose interest is it to not give you permission to do that? Mm-hmm. And I find that very very liberating in a lot of different ways.
It's challenging as product managers and innovators, and as product managers, we are innovators. We do something new often, and if we're running around asking for permission to do something new and different, we're going to get stuck in our job and not make any progress. So that's
if you're not pissing somebody off, you're probably not doing your job very well. Yeah.
There's something to be said about that for sure. Great. Well, thank you for sharing the quotes. How can listeners get their hands on your book? There's so many more topics that we did not explore that I think are applicable to B2B environments beyond just enterprise software, right? Anyone selling into the B2B and providing products for them. So some good insights there. Tell us how we can get a hold of the book, and if people want to follow up with you, make reach out to you, how do they do that?
Well, so the book is Building Products for the Enterprise. You can find it on Amazon. We actually have a website for the book. It's called buildingforbusiness.com, and you can learn all the more. There's a sample chapter of the book actually at that website, as well as some other cool resources. You can go there to check it out.
Excellent. So buildingforbusiness.com, that's a place people should go to find the information on the book and find out more information about you guys.
Exactly.
Thanks for sharing that. One more time, buildingforbusiness.com. Blair, Ben, I appreciate you taking time for this. I appreciate you writing the book and sharing your experience and knowledge with product managers and sharing this now over the podcast.
Well, thanks for having us. This has been awesome.
Thanks for having us, Chad.
Thanks for listening. Find the summary of the discussion with Blair and Ben at theeverydayinnovator.com/175. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to The Everyday Innovator, which teaches product managers to become product masters. For more resources, please visit our blog at theeverydayinnovator.com.